Excuse me. All right, good morning, everyone. I'm going to reopen this hearing. The hearing was originally opened last Friday. This is a combined hearing on the appeal of the SEPA determination. That was conducted on Friday, and then today is the hearing on the underlying permits. So I'm going to read a little information about the hearing process. Once again, this is July 11th, 2022. This is a hearing of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. My name is Andy Kotkamp, and I've been appointed by the Chelan County Board of Commissioners to serve as a land use hearing examiner. My job is to render decisions on various applications that are authorized to come before me, which include plan developments and plats. That's what is on the agenda for today. I consider any testimony and evidence presented at today's hearing, as well as all the written materials that are already on file, in order to make my decision. The hearing process has certain rules, but I try to conduct the meetings in a relaxed and informal manner, but we still have a procedure we're going to use. For the items on today's agenda, first of all, staff will present their report and make whatever recommendations that they wish to make. Then the applicant or the applicant's representative is given an opportunity to present their testimony and evidence. The applicant does have the burden of proof to show compliance with all the applicable rules and regulations. I'll then turn it over to the public for public testimony. I'd remind the public that this is not a question and answer period. This is a time for you to present your testimony and evidence as to why the project does or does not comply with all the applicable rules and regulations. Then if there's any evidence, testimony in opposition to the project, I will give the applicant an opportunity to submit whatever rebuttal testimony that they might wish to make. Now, if you're going to testify from the public, what I'll do, I think easiest, is I have all the participant lists that I can go through, and I'll just call on you one by one to see if you want to testify. At that point, you'll unmute yourself. Let me know if you do or you do not want to testify. If you do want to testify, then I will swear, I'll have you state your name and address, and then I will swear you in as a witness. If there is something in writing that you want to submit today, we can make those arrangements. I have the option following this hearing to keep the record open if I think that there's a need for additional written testimony to be submitted. But in any event, my written decision will be made in this case within 10 days of August 9th, 2022. Just a little explanation on that. At the conclusion of the SEPA portion of the hearing and pursuant to a pre-hearing order that was issued by the hearing examiner, there is some post-hearing briefing that's going to be allowed by the county and the applicant and the appellant. And that briefing ends on August 9th, 2022. And then by my order, the decisions on both the SEPA appeal and these underlying permits will be made within 10 working days of that date. Now, except as provided by the Chelan County Code regarding requests for reconsideration and request to reopen the hearing, my decision on all of these matters will be final and conclusive unless they are appealed. Appeals are by means of what's called a land use petition action. They have to be filed within 21 days of the date of the issuance of the decision. And if the appeal isn't timely filed, the appeal would be barred. The bottom line is that if you're considering an appeal of any of my decisions, you should seek immediate legal advice. Now, I've reviewed the items on today's agenda. I don't have any interest in any of the properties or the proposals to be heard today, and I'll be able to fairly and objectively consider each item. Then outside of receiving and reviewing the staff report for the item and all the exhibits that were admitted in the SEPA portion of the hearing, I've not had any communication regarding the items that are on today's agenda. So with those representations, if there is any objection to me serving as a hearing examiner for the hearing on these underlying permits, you need to unmute yourself and state so at this time. Okay, hearing none, then what we're going to turn to, these are what are known as the two permits are PD20-001 and P20-004. These are applications for a plan development and a plat to be located on property within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. Now, for the record, I'm going to admit into the record all of those exhibits and all of the testimony that was submitted and entered into the record at the SEPA portion of the hearing. So all those items are admitted into the record at this time by this reference. That's all I wanted to say, and I'll turn this matter over to staff for their presentation.
Thank you, Andy. So this is the hearing for plan development 20-001/plat 20-004. Is an application for a plan development of 7 parcels that total approximately 42 acres into 134 residential lots. The project site is located within the R1 zoning district of the Pashaston Urban Growth Area. Access for this development will consist of internal roadways off of Larson Road, for which a road deviation has been approved by Public Works. The road deviation is for the internal roadways, I should note. Domestic water will be supplied by the expansion of the existing Pashaston Water District. Sanitation will be provided by an expansion of the existing Chelan PUD Sewer District. SEPA MDNS was issued on February 3rd of 2022. Staff has suggested several conditions of approval for this project, most notably that consists of a cultural resource survey is required, obtaining an MPDS construction permit prior to the commencement of any site development, coordinating the cleanup of soils with ecology in order to meet MTCA requirements, submittal of a final landscaping plan, expansion of the existing Pashaston Water District, expansion of the existing Chelan PUD public sewer system, the reconstruction of Larson Road to meet construction design of a rural collector road design, reconstruction of Derby Canyon Road to meet construction design of a rural collector road design, to provide intersection improvements at the Larson Road and Derby Canyon Road intersection, and construction of the private internal road to meet design criteria of the approved road deviation. So staff has reviewed the application materials, the agency comments for consistency with applicable codes and regulations, and as conditions recommends approval of PD 20-001 and plat 20-004.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. White. I do not have any questions of staff. I'm very familiar with this project. We heard much about this project last Friday, so I don't have any questions for staff, at least at this time, and we'll turn this matter over to the applicant. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
Yes, sir, Mr. Examiner, Dan Beardsley, representing the applicant.
All right, Mr. Beardsley, would you raise your right hand for me? Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that your testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. And you've indicated that you're here as an agent authorized to appear and speak on behalf of the property owner and applicant today?
I have.
All right, thank you very much. And what would you like to tell me?
All righty. Well, as you mentioned, you're very familiar with this project. I'm not going to go into a great deal of take a lot of your time explaining what the project is. I'm sure you're well aware of the elements of the project. It is 42, as Alex said, and described very well in his staff report. It is 42 acres, proposing 134 lots. The applicant is Karnan Bergeron. I see he's online this morning. I don't know if he intends to testify or not. I didn't expect him to be here, but he's here, so that's good. And then we've got other team members, Todd Smith, the principal designer of the project, John Torrance as the civil engineer. Mike Reed, as you know, is the traffic engineer for this project. We did not ask him to participate. It seems like his testimony was and his report and testimony were all pretty much taken care of during the CEPA hearing last Friday. Todd and John are here to answer any questions you might have specifically for them that they would be more prepared to answer than me. And just let me know if I inappropriately stray into the CEPA territory here that we spent all day on last Friday. So, these issues overlap. So, just I know you'll keep me straightened out if I go astray here. We think we've checked all the boxes found in the county's code for plan development at Peshawson UGA. County staff, as you've seen in their staff report, agrees with that. And that's how we got to this hearing. We've been working on this proposal for the better part of 3 years. The application was actually submitted in December of 2020. So we're long ways into this project here. We're also satisfied with the MDNS mitigation conditions and the all 54 of the suggested conditions of approval recommended by staff. We don't think there'll be any reason to need any variances at any point in the project. We did get a deviation approved for the road development, and I'll cover that in a little bit. I think it's important to keep in mind that this property and almost all the surrounding property is included in the Peshawson UGA. That sort of set the stage for the land use planning in this area and the regulations governing that. The EGA and the PD provisions were adopted in 2008 and reaffirmed by the county commissioners with a few minor wording changes in June of 2020. So this really forms the basis for this land use decision. And the question is, does this application satisfy those requirements? And we think it does. So I'll get into a few of the specific issues that have been raised during the course of the review of this project. One is the lead arsenic cleanup, and that's clearly a SEPA issue. But I think it's worth mentioning that the contamination is not a result of this project. The contamination was caused by application of chemicals 70 years ago or more. And this project actually offers an opportunity to clean that up, where if nothing is done with the property, that the lead and arsenic contamination is still there. As you undoubtedly know, if it was legally applied at the time, there is no legal requirement for the owner of the property to clean it up otherwise, unless the applicant changes the use of the property, which would occur by development of this PD. So we have an opportunity to clean it up, and otherwise still there. During the course of the hearing last Friday, one of the adjacent owners was concerned about the irrigation service, and worried that if all the people who live here turn on the water the lawns, it might compromise their orchard irrigation. And that's really not the case. It's no different than any other application similar to this. Residential use, in fact, uses much less water than agricultural use. And the ag use has been going on for I don't know how many years, maybe 100 years or close to it. So I don't think that's a legitimate issue. And it's actually common in these types of development. I'll give you a real quick anecdotal example. The property right below where I live in East Wenatchee was developed a few years ago. And the irrigation line that serves them comes through my property. It's the exact corollary exact same situation. And what we did, each owner buys shares from the irrigation district. They're entitled to X amount of water, acre feet or an instantaneous and gallons per minute. And that's all they get. And there's ways of handling that. So I don't think that's even a germane issue here. The traffic concerns were a big issue with many of the people making comments on this project. I think you heard plenty of testimony on that during the SEPA appeal. I didn't invite Mike Reed here today because I think that's been so well vetted during the SEPA hearing that I'm can't imagine you'd be interested in hearing much more about that. So in terms of density, 42.1 acres, 134 units. The underlying zoning allows 210 units. So we're not asking for any additional density. In fact, it's much less than the underlying density. A PD might use up to 8 units per acre, so we're way, way below that. And the reason we're doing the planned development is not because we want additional density. The main reason for doing a PD was to have some respect for the topography of the site. We didn't, I'd encourage an examiner, if you haven't already done it, to take a look at the site, and you can see that the terrain is kind of a rolling terrain, and we wanted the roads to fit the terrain and not have too much mass grading where you would, to build the standard urban road section with the curved gutter and sidewalk, big wide road, you'd have to do a lot of grading, moving a lot of dirt. And we didn't want to do that. We wanted to fit the terrain a lot better than, and that's why we went the PD route, because that way we can change the road standard, but still have a good road, but and a functional road, but not have those great big wide city streets. We didn't apply for the PD just for increased density. It was really just to make the project be more respectful of the existing terrain. With regard to stormwater, the preliminary stormwater is just that, it's preliminary. And we are fully aware that during the course of the project approval, we'll need to file final stormwater management plans. And those will be consistent with the Eastern Washington Stormwater Manual. We don't have an option there, that's the requirement. And if it's not, they won't be approved, the project won't get built. So we know we have to do that. We don't do that at the preliminary stage because we're looking for the land use approval here. We're not looking for specific design element approval. And the same can be said about domestic water and sewer. It's well recognized that the Shaston Water District will need upgrades to their facilities, and those have to be approved by the district, or we won't have a project. The same can be said for the sewer. We know the sewer district, or the PUD in this case, who manages the sewer district, will want improvements, and they may even require some improvements to our plant until there's an engineering analysis done of that. We don't know what those are, but they will be required, whatever they are. So we don't know at this point exactly what they are, but they have to be done. And just like any other component of the project, has to be done and approved prior to construction. So those are the elements I wanted to cover with you. Do you have any specific questions for me at this point, Mr. Examiner?
Well, no, I don't. I have reviewed everything as you're indicated, and I've indicated, I understand the project quite well. You've indicated that the applicant has no objection to any of the proposed conditions of approval in the staff report, as well as those conditions of approval in the MDNS. That's correct?
That's correct.
All right, thank you. Is there anybody else from the applicant, Mr. Beardsley, that wanted to testify today?
I don't think so. So we're good to go. Anxious to hear from the public and whatever else we need to do.
All right, thank you very much. So I will now turn this over to the public, and I'm going to go through my participant list here and go through the people I know that I recognize and some that I don't, I assume are here for the public. We'll start with Ms. Blaisdell. If you wish to testify, could you please unmute yourself? All right, not hearing anything from Ms. Blaisdell, we'll turn to Cheryl A's iPhone. If you wish to testify, please unmute yourself. Okay, hearing none. Cynthia Garza, if you wish to testify, could you please unmute yourself? All right, Gregory Peek, would you like to testify? If so, please unmute yourself.
Yes, I would.
All right, could you state your name and your address, and then I'm going to swear you in as a witness.
Gregory L. Peek, 9502 Derby Canyon Road, Peshawston.
All right, sir, I'll have you raise your right hand. I'll take your word for it. Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. Sir, what would you like to tell me about this project?
One of my concerns is that the bypass where you're coming from Peshawston, downtown Peshawston to Derby Canyon Road, and you take a left at the old Montler building, not Montler, but take a left to go down the bypass. That, for older people who can't turn in their vehicles, it's a blind spot for us because you're coming to a stop sign and you have to completely turn around and look to see if any cars coming under the trestle. That's what one of my big concerns is. Does that make sense, Mr. Examiner?
Yes, it does. I understand what you're talking about.
Okay, that's all I have to say.
All right, Mr. Peek, thank you very, very much for coming in today. I appreciate that.
Thank you, bye.
Is there Emerson Peek that wishes to testify?
I'm good, Mr. Examiner, thank you.
I'll have you state, you said you're good, okay. Lori Malmquist, did you wish to testify?
Yes, I do.
All right, I'll have you state your name and an address for me, and then I will swear you in as a witness.
My name is Lori Malmquist. My address is 8570 Ludwig Hill Road, Peshawston.
All right, thank you. I'll have you raise your right hand for me. And do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. And what would you like to tell me?
Well, I think my comments have been made by, we submitted comments to the county, written comments. So I would just like to reiterate that we being the community of Peshawston, I'm the current chair of the community council. We've had numerous community meetings, and we have concerns with many of the topics that were brought up in the SEPA hearing, the inadequate traffic study. And I know you said earlier, or Mr. Beardsley said earlier, that many of the elements of the permit will be addressed, and based on developments that have happened in, well, for example, in Leavenworth, leaving some of those important elements like stormwater, sewer, and water supply, the basic infrastructure, leaving it until a developer comes in and develops it, has proven to be detrimental to the communities. Developers don't necessarily follow through appropriately. So that is a big concern of the community. And just the scale of the proposed development with its impacts, especially traffic to Peshawston, seem inappropriate. It doesn't really fit our infrastructure. And that's it for me.
All right. Here's my notes. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, thank you. Ms. Hurst, you're next on the list. I don't know if you want to provide any testimony or you're just here to observe.
I would, Mr. Examiner.
You would like to testify?
I would like to testify. I don't know if you want to put me towards the end so everybody in the public has an opportunity to comment first, but the Rossies and I would like to comment today.
Are you going to be providing testimony yourself?
I was going to
argument on the, or just argument on the record?
Well, I want to go through the, you know, the criteria for the PD and kind of walk through some of the exhibits. I know we've done briefing on this, but I thought it might be helpful today to go through and look at exhibits together.
Well, how long are you planning to take for this?
I wouldn't imagine it would be more than 20 or 30 minutes.
All right. Well, we'll see where we go on this, but I'll have you state your name and your address for me, and if it starts going on too long, I'll let you know.
All right, sounds good. Megan Hurst, address is 1911 Southwest Campus Drive, number 774, Federal Way, Washington, 98023.
Yeah, I'll have you raise your right hand for me. Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. And what would you like to tell me?
So as you know, I represent the Rossies who live, you know, have an orchard north of the development site in Peshaston. And we are opposing this approval of this permit. And today obviously is code criterion comp plan compliance is an issue. So, you know, we do not dispute that a planned development is allowed on this site. That's undeniable. But again, it requires careful planning due to the land use conflicts, the contamination, and the infrastructure issues that are clearly an issue in this community. The main points really are that the submittal has either inaccurate or incomplete information. Information is just not provided in some areas, which are required elements for submittal. And the application does not comply with the comprehensive plan. As you know, project must comply with comp plan and the code, and the applicant simply has not met their burden in this case. Mr. Examiner, can I do a screen share and put up the Chelan County code on the plan development?
If that's necessary, can you allow her to screen share, Wendy?
It's been allowed.
Thank you, Wendy. So plan development, you know, with, I know you're familiar with this code section, but some of the key takeaways from this section are careful application of design components. A PD, unlike a standard subdivision, requires more planning. And I think maybe that's a little bit even of what Mr. Beardsley was touching on in his testimony is, you know, they pick this PD, it sounds like. He's saying they don't want increased density, but they are slightly over the five, no, actually they're at the five dwelling units per acre, but they needed a road deviation. So they picked the plan development framework to proceed with, but that doesn't eliminate the requirement of this higher design standard that they have to meet. The careful application of design elements. Very little design was actually provided, even though it's required by the PD code. There's an exchange of public benefits to achieve comprehensive plan goals. Really, the public benefit of this project, that from what we can tell, is the open space, which doesn't actually meet the code requirement, which we'll talk about a little bit later, and this trail system throughout the development, which they removed the sidewalk with the road deviation. So they're really just replacing trail with, you know, pedestrian access with the sidewalk that would have been there. So, you know, I don't think, you know, it would be our position that the applicant has not met the burden of showing that they have established public benefits are generated or satisfaction of the comprehensive goals with this development. And it is also in this code section that the design needs to reduce development impacts to adjacent neighborhoods through design and mitigation. Now we know the surrounding property is agriculture, and there is a clear conflict between the agricultural uses and the residential uses, but even the code buffering that is required wasn't put in place. So no careful application of design components, many not provided, no public benefits, and there are impacts to neighbors, and no mitigation has been done. The standard simply has not been met. The next item is the Agricultural Review Committee, which I know we talked about in our briefing, so I'm just going to touch on this briefly, but Agricultural Review Committee is its own chapter in the Chelan County Code, and it was created to specifically address these exact types of land use conflicts, but the county did not submit it to the Agricultural Review Committee, and so we contend that that should have been done as a preliminary part of this process to get feedback on how to deal with the land use conflicts that are present here. We also have density. I'm going to move to density now. The staff report says the density is 3.8 dwelling units per acre. This is actually incorrect. This is lot count density, and we know density is actually based on dwelling units per acre. So when we use dwelling units per acre, we're at 4.9. It's still below the 5 units per acre, which is allowed per the code. But we have a lot of mixed information in the materials that the applicant submitted. We have statements that, you know, about the maximum density allowed in the PD is what they're seeking. So that would be 8 dwelling units per acre. So I think it is really, really important to note that we need to have it needs to be clear what is the density that they're proposing, because the density is going to drive so many of the design factors here. And without a housing mix, because they're having single family residential, duplex, single family with accessory dwelling units, all of those, especially duplex and homes, single family homes with accessory dwelling units, those are two, you know, that bumps, that doubles the density. So without a clear limit on density and a mix that gets approved as part of their approvals, we, you know, it's really, we could be as high as 268 units in that development. And as you know, the density and the intensity of the land use drives the design criteria in a PD. So the PD code says density or intensity that's greater than what's allowed in the underlying zone requires extra buffering and additional design requirements. So we need to have that information as part of the application so we know what criteria we need to hold the applicant to in terms of design. Now I want to get to this touches on what Mr. Beardsley was talking about, and actually Lori Malmquist as well. What is, you know, what the criteria, the submittal criteria is for the PD. Now in the staff report, the staff report says that this criteria is not applicable because they're not seeking a density bonus, but this is actually not true. Para 6 is the criteria for submittal. What it says is a subdivision is required for all planned developments and shall include the following: all information required on the preliminary plat, the location of all existing and proposed structures, which none of that was provided, a detailed landscape plan indicating the existing of location of existing vegetation, what will be retained, the names of the vegetation and their mature height. This was not provided. Schematic plans and elevations of proposed buildings with samples of exterior finish and material colors. Pictures of the homes that they would like to see in this development were provided, but that was it. No information on lighting. Utility, street, and stormwater drainage plans. And this goes back also, I think, to what Mr. Beardsley was commenting on. How much detail do we provide up front versus how much detail do we provide later? In this case, because it's a planned development, it is a code requirement that utility, street, stormwater drainage plans that indicate facilities, layout, and capacities necessary to serve the entire planned development. This criteria simply just was not followed. Those are the primary, you know, code sections that we've looked at that we find that there's non-compliance. You know, every planned development code is, you know, generated through these community groups approved by, you know, the decision makers at the county, and they're tailored to the unique concerns of the area. Clearly the drafters of the urban, you know, of the plan of the UGA code and the PD development code understood there were unique issues in this area regarding land use conflicts and infrastructure, and they wanted more planning on the front end. Code cannot be ignored, as much as we don't need the level of detail, you know, that often is required at the actual design stage, but at least conceptually, the applicant needs to establish that these are feasible, that utilities are feasible, that stormwater is feasible, and they have not met that that standard. They have not met their burden of proof. The first one, all information required on the preliminary plat. This goes to the irrigation issue. Information required on the preliminary plat includes all easements. There are, as we talked about yesterday at the SEPA hearing, there are water lines that run across the applicant's property that service orchards to the south, and those are not on the face of the preliminary plat. So that requirement has not been met. And this is important because these irrigation lines are serving orchards. They can't be interrupted. Where their location on the site may impact the design and the layout of the project. This is stuff that needs to be dealt with upfront and part of the design process, which was just completely omitted. Location of existing and proposed structures. We had one typical site layout that showed a structure, you know, showed homes on a duplex lot and a single family residential lot, but code requires proposed structures to be shown on the face of the site plan, and they were not shown. And this is important because this helps us determine how many deviations in design are they seeking. This affects the intensity of the land use, shorter, you know, less lot coverage, fewer setbacks, smaller lot widths, smaller lots overall. All of that affects the intensity of the use of the land and thus the design requirements. Without knowing that information, we can't really know what design standard that they need to be held to. Landscaping plan. That was, you know, let me pull up the landscaping plan here for you, Mr. Examiner. Landscape plan. Here's the landscaping plan. So landscaping plan said they were required to submit at this time, not later, but now, a detailed landscape plan. You know, what is retained, what's installed, the type, the name, and the mature height. This is all that we got for the landscaping plan. It just does not meet the code requirements. It just simply doesn't. The next criteria for submittal for the PD, schematic plans, elevations, material colors, and exterior lighting. Arguably, the photographs that were presented satisfy some of this criteria, but there was nothing at all submitted regarding exterior lighting. We have many, many comment letters from the public concerned about the light pollution. And we have a map here showing A20. There we go. You'd seen this map on Friday, Mr. Examiner. So this, where all the yellow indicated, you know, numbers are, those are all homes that are located around the proposed development. And they all will be impacted by the light that emanates from this development. We have no information about it. Is the trail going to be lighted? Is there going to be street lights? Are they going to do downward lighting on the face, you know, on the frontage of the homes? Are they going to do some kind of shared lighting? You know, all of this is really important to the community. That's why it was put in the comprehensive plan. And it needs to be submitted now so the public has an opportunity to comment on it. So again, this criteria was not met. Utility street and stormwater plans were another requirement of the PD submittal. So I'd initially like to point out that no plans were submitted at all. Well, water plans were submitted through the R2 water availability letter, but that was for 127 lots, not the 214 plus lots that they're actually proposing. So, and there were no plans at all submitted for the sewer. And we know that because they actually don't have the infrastructure available to serve this project currently. So stormwater plans, again, we had a narrative. We didn't have plans. There's no location of facilities. There's no capacities. These are all code requirements. And the stormwater plan was for the wrong kind of project altogether. It's, as we pointed out on Friday, the stormwater plan is for rural lots, not urban lot, urban sized lots. In the Chelan County code, the largest rural, or the, sorry, the smallest rural lot is 2.5 acres. In this project, the lots range from 7,000 square feet to in the 20,000 square foot range, you know, lots of 7, 9, 10,000 square foot lots. I mean, significantly smaller urban sized lots. The design is for a rural lot development. I mean, it is just not adequate. They have to at least make a conceptual showing that what they're proposing is going to work, and they work out the details later. But even this, these upfront initial submittals just weren't provided. Code requires a 100-foot setback from agriculture. And this also was not part of their plan. Here we go. So these are the development standards for the R1 plan development, or inside the urban growth area. So we have, these are the dimensional standards, but we have here minimum setbacks, footnote 6. Setbacks may be modified consistent with 1188040. Structures located adjacent to commercial agriculture activities will be required to have a 100-foot setback, except when a waiver is recorded. So Mr. Examiner, this is, you know, kind of a twofold issue. One, it's another deviation that the developer is seeking, doesn't have proper authority for it because he didn't get the waivers from the neighbors. And also, you know, without this buffer, I mean, clearly this was in place to help mitigate the land use conflicts between residential and agriculture. And it just was not included in their design, and it should have been. And a perfect example of that is the letter that was sent from the applicant. 827. That we brought to your attention on Friday, the letter from the applicant, that the very first spray of this season, there was overspray onto this new development site because there's no buffer between the two properties. And so the very first spray of the season, applicant sends a letter to the neighboring orchard, you know, orchardist, and says, you can't overspray onto my property. This is a spray-free zone. Well, as we talked about yesterday, we know farmers do their absolute best to prevent overspray, but it is a reality of farming. And so I think the applicant really proves our point in this case that how important this 100-foot setback is. And we have, you know, it should have been included. Failure to include it does not satisfy the, you know, the permit criteria. Open space. The open space, I'm going to go back to the landscaping plan. A7. All right, landscaping plan. Open space requirement not met. The open space is supposed to be contiguous, usable, concentrated, and connected to large usable areas and cannot have a slope more than 15%. Do you see the landscaping there, Mr. in landscaping plan?
Yeah, I see what you've got A7 showing on the screen.
Okay. So the largest open space tract is right here. This is what they call tract D. And keeping in mind, it cannot exceed a 15% slope. We have the geotech report that says that this area has a 50% slope. 50. It's not usable. It's steep. So it really requires a redesign. That area is not suitable for open space, nor are these remaining areas large, connected, and usable. Open space requirement not met. In terms of the irrigation, kind of touching back on that, that is a utility. It's a utility, and plans should have been submitted. The staff report, interestingly, staff report at 5 lists all the agencies and departments that were given notice of this application, and the irrigation district is not listed on there. So irrigation, they say they got no comments from irrigation district, but they were never provided notice and an opportunity to comment. But this is a utility that is going to service the plat, and according to the plan development code, utility plans infrastructure with facilities and capacities is supposed to be provided at the front end, and nothing on irrigation was provided. And as we talked about a little bit about on, I think the Rossi's, Melissa Rossi brought this up on Friday, is how is this going to be managed? Because if there's 200 and plus new users that have access to this, how many boxes are going to be put up there? Are there going to be 214 new boxes put up onto this antiquated system? How is this all going to work? Are they going to have that many people coming across their property to access their boxes and turn it on or off? Is there going to be one box that services the whole community? So we ask that there at least be a condition of approval put on. We would say that the requirement that plans be submitted for utilities, the irrigation utility, was not met. But even at that, there needs to be a condition of approval that says the homeowners association is going to manage the water rights. So there's one, entity that's dealing with the district, that's on the property, one person in charge to kind of streamline this. Kind of now circling back around again to the water and the sewer. Code says that land is only suitable for subdivision if you can ensure that water and sewer can be provided to each lot. If not, it's grounds for denial or issuance of conditions necessary to satisfy this criteria. As we pointed out in the briefing, the water and sewer availability letters are for completely different sized projects, 127 units on water and 140 units on sewer. It doesn't even encompass the whole entire plan development. And then we have Steve Keen, the manager of the water district, who's saying if the project's over 127 units, a new water letter is required. So they have not met the criteria to show that water and sewer are adequate. In fact, when it comes to the water, we have Steve Keen's declaration that says, we don't even think there's adequate fire flow. He's suggesting that a new water tower is actually needed and more study is required before this development can be approved. And so I want to touch again sort of on what Dan Beardsley was saying, is that, yeah, we don't have to have every detail planned out, but we do need to at least conceptually know generally what requirements are going to be required. I mean, we go to the design phase next, but hey, if a water tower is going to be needed to service this development, then that needs to be an improvement that's required along with the plat. And then they can design, get all into crunching the numbers of what that exactly looks like later. But we need to, on a conceptual level, know what is going to be required to service this plat. And they don't have that information. The sewer availability letter basically says there is not infrastructure for this project in place. It doubles the number of residential connections and far exceeds what they anticipated in terms of growth. Engineering analysis is necessary to identify the scope and cost of the required improvements to serve the proposed subdivision. That should be done now, not later. we can't issue a condition to satisfy this because we don't know what is required. Just two more topics here, Mr. Examiner, and then I'll be done. On the traffic impact study, I did want to just touch on that, not on the SEPA front, but on from a comprehensive plan perspective. You know, I think it became really clear yet on Friday that the traffic study that was submitted did not study the impacts to the fruit trucking industry that's right there, very, very close to this proposed development. The traffic element in the comprehensive plan says at 29, Chelan County is home to a number of key freight generating and time sensitive industries, including agriculture and forestry. Some of the key freight generators in the county are High Up Growers in Peshaston. We know also Bluebird is right there. Big, big operations, really important to Chelan County and protected in the comprehensive plan and in the code. Agriculture as a priority land use. But the traffic element specifically says providing a transportation system that accommodates these key economic generators and timely movement of goods is central importance to Chelan County. No impact to the freight lines was analyzed, other than, you know, we did get comments from 10W, the applicant's engineer, that more traffic is going to create more delays. So the traffic impact study was not adequate. It was not in compliance with the comprehensive plan's mandate of protecting trucking. And so it really needs to be redone and with an appropriate scope. Finally, on contamination. Contamination is primarily a SEPA issue, but the permit issue is how do we notify owners that are buying into this subdivision that they are going to have these requirements to clean up, and also that they're buying in a subdivision that is potentially unsafe. So the model remedy says there are three options for this notice. One is, and it doesn't tell you which one is going to be used. That's why I think it's important to make it a condition of approval. But it says, you know, we can do a environmental covenant, which they said is kind of more appropriate for commercial projects. You can do plat notes, which, you know, nobody, you know, homeowners don't read those. That's attorneys and engineers that look at those. Or it can be in the CCNRs, which is a better option. The current CCNRs that were submitted have nothing in them about the contamination, the requirement to clean up. So this is not fully developed. This is not adequate. We are at a place really where we should be approving this. The more planning, more development needs to be done. This is also consistent with the model development agreement, which is when the developer sells lots to homeowners and builders, you know, they are taking on the cleanup responsibility. It references this, the CCNRs will contain this language per Exhibit D. Exhibit D is not attached. So this is in need of more work. It isn't sufficient. In conclusion, it's just a bit of a mystery why this project is even before the examiner at this point in time. There's so many deficiencies in this proposal. Applicant has not met their burden of proof. They really need to go back to the drawing board. There's just too many missing elements, you know, to get their open space and their stormwater facilities, because remember, stormwater facilities, one, the plan they provided doesn't really work for this project, nor was there room for, you know, the dispersion pads that they're talking about. And they can't cross over storm drainage into open space because that's a code requirement. So they got to create more space. They need room for stormwater facilities. They need room for appropriate open space. They need this 100-foot buffer. I mean, it's going to completely change the site design. So, you know, there's really no amount of conditioning that's going to make this ready for approval. It's not consistent with code. It is not consistent with the comprehensive plan. And we ask that you, Mr. Examiner, deny the permit.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Hurst. Let's see here. I forget if I did. Melissa R., did you want to provide testimony today?
Yes, Mr. Hearing Examiner, I think that my connection might be listed twice.
All right, did you want to provide testimony?
I do, thank you.
And your name and address, please?
Melissa Rossi, 8652 Larson Road.
Okay, I'll have you raise your right hand for me. And do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. You did testify before, so please try not to repeat the testimony that's already been given. And what new information would you like me to consider?
Sure. Well, similar to what Mr. Peek mentioned, I'm very concerned about that irregular intersection. My kids are young drivers. Teenagers have blind spots too. And as a middle-aged driver, I find that intersection difficult as it is. I'm very interested in why the county did not require the stop sign that was recommended by the traffic study. I think it was affirmed on Friday that that would help, yet it was not conditioned. And that has not been fully explained. I'm also glad that there is an opportunity to clean up the soil per Mr. Beardsley's comment, but the exposure during construction, I think, is still a significant concern. It's the most dangerous way to clean up the soil when there are other options. It could go on for years. It's, I think, planned to go on for years, and that puts the neighborhood at risk, including my family, and that's my concern. We talked a little bit about noise on Friday. The sound of what goes on in an orchard is just, it's super likely to create complaints. That's, you know, I think to be expected in any situation like this, but I think the lack of buffering and the proximity of the project to several orchards and you know, numerous pieces of equipment that are used in those orcharding operations should be considered and hasn't been. And in general, the number of code requirements that either aren't met or that we don't fully understand are frustrating at best. When we purchased our property in 2019, we read the code, we read the plan, we relied upon that information to make a decision in investing in this community and in this county. And if those requirements are not relevant and no one can explain that, I don't know why anybody except a developer would invest in this county. We asked many, many questions prior to the initial hearing. We made many public records requests. I do understand that staffing is an issue in responding to all of these requests. But the fact of the matter is, we didn't get those answers. It was like we went on mute and nobody would explain why these things exist in this plan or don't exist in this plan. So that's basically all I have to say. I just wanted to emphasize that this is not what could be interpreted from the code. If somebody such as myself making a decision about buying adjacent to it, we're looking to the code and relying upon the code and the comprehensive plan to assist in decision making.
All right, thank you for coming today as well. Michael J. Link, did you want to provide testimony today?
Thanks, Hearing Examiner. I'm on the vision team for the land development, so I'm not a witness to testimony.
Okay, thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Dodge. Are you here to present testimony today?
I would like to briefly, Your Honor, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that.
All right, why don't you just state your name and an address for me, and then I'll put you under oath.
Robert Dodge, address is 8825 Derby Canyon Road.
All right.
And that's Peshasta.
All right, Mr. Dodge, I'll have you raise your right hand for me. And sir, do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. What would you like to tell me?
Mr. Beardsley, whose work I respect a great deal and with whom I've worked quite a number of years over the years, he led with the fact that in 2008, this area was included in the urban growth area. And I would expect him to lead with that. And I think the sense that he was trying to convey, which I think is the wrong sense, as I'll explain, is that the community has already had an opportunity to weigh in on this kind of development when the this property was included in the urban growth area. And I think that the false aspect of that is that while the UGA may outline things on a conceptual basis and try to provide a mechanism for creative development, until the community has an opportunity to see something specific that's proposed, the community can't really weigh in on a meaningful basis of exactly the impacts of what is specifically proposed. And so I wanted to deflect the idea that apart from the details and the specifics and, you know, the close examination of whether all the boxes have been checked, as Mr. Beardley says, I think it's important for you to really dig into the correspondence that the community has spent a lot of time preparing and providing to you about the intangible aspects of this. This may check all the boxes, but there are some aspects to this development that don't fit within boxes. And that is the size and scope, and I think this is a theme that runs throughout the submittals by the community. The size and scope of this proposal will have a very, very significant impact on the quality of life, the existing quality of life, the cultural feel of Peshaston, the small town, sleepy kind of small town feel of Peshaston, that will be changed forever if this application is approved as it's been outlined. And one of the things that concerns me about this, I mean, it's personal to me. I live here. I drive up and down Derby Canyon Road, past Larson Road, past this development every day. So this is when I speak of the significant cultural change deprivation that will be associated with this development. I know what I'm talking about. The community, I think that you as the hearing examiner needs to take into consideration those intangible aspects. And again, one of the things that concerns me about this is that there seems to be have been a complete lack of sensitivity on the part of the developer and perhaps on the part of the development team to the community's concerns about the size and scope of this project and the impact it will have on the quality of life here. There's been no discussions that I'm aware of, no negotiations. And it seems like that's an important component of your analysis of whether to approve or disapprove or additionally condition this project. That those outside the box considerations have not been met. And I would urge you to spend time in the correspondence that the community has again taken a lot of time and a lot of heartfelt effort in appealing to you about what is going to happen to our community if this development is approved on the scope and scale that is being proposed. And that's all I have. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you very much. Next up was Rossi, but Mr. Rossi, did you want to provide any testimony today? I see a shake of the head. Okay. All right. Finally, we have Stephen Boer. Are you here from the public and wish to testify today?
I'm on part of the development team, so no comment from me.
All right, thank you. I'll just do one last. If anybody here from the public that hasn't testified, if you want to testify, this is your opportunity. Any member of the public that wishes to provide any testimony? All right, I'm not seeing anybody unmute themselves, so we'll go to staff. Is there anything further from staff?
Yes, I do have a couple of items to address. So one thing that I neglected to mention in my presentation of the project is like the plan deviation allowances that are being proposed as part of this project, just so as clearly stated on the record. So the applicants are would like as part of the planning or as part of the plan development is zero side yard setbacks in order to allow for zero lot line townhomes. The minimum size lot in the R1 zoning district is 7,500 square feet. They are proposing actually to have the minimum lot size at 6,900 square feet because nine lots are below the 7,500 square foot threshold. And then also the approved road deviation as part of their deviations applied for as part of the plan development. Secondly, I would like to state that none of the surrounding properties are zoned commercial agriculture. Therefore, the 100-foot ag zoning buffer would not apply. That only applies to properties that are adjacent to properties zoned commercial agriculture. So even though the ag use is on the surrounding properties, they would not have to abide by the 100-foot setback. Third thing is staff had determined that the open space provision was met in the part of the plan development because of the trail connection, and that the trail connection was the connecting factor between all the open spaces. So it is one singular open space. Lastly, the irrigation district was notified as part of the development or as part of the notice of application. They just did not provide any comments.
All right, just a second here. All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Beardsley, is there anything further from the applicant?
Yeah, just quick comments on some of the comments that were offered. Mr. Peak mentioned the bypass, that little bypass road there at the intersection of Derby Canyon Road and Main Street. Not much we can do about that. That's a county road facility. Lori Malmquist questioned the infrastructure. I'll dive into that a little bit, but I think I already did. The infrastructure that's necessary for the project will have to be built and designed and built. That's standard on any land use application. With regard to Ms. Hurst's comments about providing public benefits, that's pretty squishy sort of a term, but in this case, there are, in my mind at least, some measurable public benefits, such as cleanup of the lead arsenic on the site, road improvements to Derby Canyon Road and Larson Road. There was testimony at the CEPA hearing about runoff from this property already causing some problems that would be fixed as a part of this project. So if I thought about it, probably come up with some more, but I think that in a general ways addresses the public benefits issue. She mentioned the Ag Review Committee, and I'm sure Mr. White can confirm that. I don't think the Schlein County has an Ag Review Committee. I've never seen it convened, or I don't think we even have one. So that's that becomes pretty moot if you got to go before a committee that doesn't exist. with regard to density, it's outlined in the application and in the staff report. I don't think we need to dwell on that any further. It's 134 units, so
134 dwelling units or 134 lots?
134 lots. There's a general provision that some of the lots might be available for duplex or townhouses. We don't have a specific count, but it would. It's going to be way below the 5 units per acre threshold that would require the 11 elements would have to be satisfied for that.
So do you have a number of the maximum density of dwelling units?
I don't have that. That's yet to be determined. And if you want to condition that on being under 5 units per acre overall, I think that would be satisfactory.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Utilities, Ms. Hurst suggested you're just not detailed enough. We don't have enough information to develop detailed site plans. We don't know, as you saw in the comment letter from the Water District and the Sewer District, an engineering study has to be conducted. We don't do that for a preliminary subdivision land use application. That happens down the road. We don't know what's going to be required specifically. We can't provide that information. Same goes for her mention that the proposed structures should be shown. She's conflating final plat approval and preliminary subdivision approval. As you know, we don't know exactly what's going to be built on every lot, and certainly the applicant is not compelled to show exactly what's being built on every lot. That's never a requirement, ever has been, and it's just unreasonable to ask for that.
So do you have, I mean, her comment was related to specific language in 1122 and subsection 6, 050 sub 6, and talks about information that shall be required. I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's as part of the application. So do you have any response to her argument about if this is required information for the application?
Yes, sir. When the 2020 revision to the code was implemented, there was some confusing language in there about what is a subdivision plan and what's a binding site plan. That's typically what's shown on a binding site plan. And that's not required at this stage of development. We just don't have enough information to do that until we know where the utilities are and what the capacity is and for sewer and water and all that. We just simply can't provide that. And that's why the binding site plan and subdivision requirements, those particular issues are moved down the road after we get the land use approval and say, yeah, now you can go ahead and study those issues and provide us with a plan. The county has to approve that. So the binding site plan in particular is a administrative approval from the Community Development Department. So either and one or the other, they're going to have a pretty good bite at what we're proposing in detail. But we just don't have the ability to do that until, and we don't want to move ahead with spending, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars on design without a land use approval. It just doesn't make any sense.
All right, thank you.
And then she mentioned the landscape plan's inadequate. Well, you heard from Mr. White, the county feels it's adequate. We do as well. The lighting, there's a final landscape plan required, and we can address that during that phase of the project, but that's not part of the preliminary approval. The 100-foot setback from ag, that's an interesting feature. Even if Mr. White is not correct and it only applies to ag zone land, even if it applied to the adjacent properties, you can see how this could really be a timing issue. I know, for instance, one of the adjoining owners is looking at developing their property as well, and it's currently an orchard. Well, what if he takes that orchard out? Now it's no longer an ag use. The timing of that is just really complicated. So hopefully Mr. White's right about that, and that 100-foot setback is not required. And that was identified during our pre-application conference as the situation. So that's why there is not a 100-foot setback proposed on those lands. So hopefully that's true. The open space not being adequate, Mr. White addressed that as well. And we believe that he's correct about that. And again, on the irrigation, that's just a normal development issue, as you are well aware. When a final plat is filed, the irrigation district has to be notified that each lot is getting so much water, and those have to be divvied up. That all happens during the final plat process. The actual infrastructure, how many boxes and that sort of thing, that's all just engineering requirements, normal development stuff in this region where we have irrigation. The traffic, she mentioned the traffic again, that she didn't feel there was adequate consideration of the processing plants or the whatever they are, packing plants or cold storage, whatever they are, they're the high up in Peshawta growers. That was addressed by Mr. Reed on Friday and in detail. And really, I think the in discussing whether or not to approve the application, I think the standard is there a diminished level of service under 5817, you know, the subdivision code. That's one of the things the hearing examiner is compelled to look at. Is there a diminished level of service? And I think Mr. Reed said, no, don't quote me on this, go back to his report to know exactly, but I think none of the levels of service would be diminished below level C. And Chelan County that has adopted that as a perfectly adequate level of service. So nothing is being diminished between below the level of service required for approval. Melissa Rossi mentioned lack of buffering, and I think I just discussed that and agree with Mr. White. Mr. Dodge, who I also respect, have worked with him on various issues over the years. We're both old codgers, you know, trying to scratch out a living. And I think the argument that they're losing the small town feel or changes the culture, yes, that's true. But that's why they adopted the sub-area plan. It's and then reaffirmed it just to 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago, that was reaffirmed by the county commissioners. So that whether you do this all as one development or you do it 5 acres at a time, the result is the same. It's planned for that kind of, I won't say urban, but sort of a rural urban type development, but that's the plan. And as far as Mr. Berger is concerned, he's simply implementing that plan. Regardless, if the county wants to abandon that plan, that's one thing, but they haven't elected to do that even as recently as 2 years ago. So I think that's all I got.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Beardsley. I don't have any questions of the applicant. Was there anybody else from the applicant that wanted to provide any final comments or testimony? Mr. Beardsley?
Oh, I don't think so. No, I'm okay. Sorry.
All right. All right, thank you. So everyone, what I'm going to do is I am going to close the public record portion of this hearing. As I indicated before, I will have a written decision made within 10 working days of August 9th, 2022. I appreciate everybody coming to today's hearing. I appreciate everybody coming to the and watching and observing and testifying at the SEPA portion of the hearing on Friday as well. I understand the importance of this project, both pro and con, to all of the neighbors and to the county. I will take a very, very careful look at all the aspects and concerns and required criteria for approval for these projects if I get to that point after making a decision on the SEPA appeal. So there are no other items that are on today's agenda. So I'm now going to adjourn this July 11th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. Thank you all very much for coming. Have a very, very nice day. This meeting is now adjourned.